All right. Hi, everyone. You're listening to the Blockchain Socialist Podcast. And today I'm here with Kat. Someone's been working on a project called ETH Evacuations. It's essentially offering a way for people to give crypto to fund the evacuations of those currently trapped in Gaza and the ongoing genocide. And I recently came across Kat and her work. And as soon as I found out what it was and did my appropriate kind of social proof checking, I found it very important that I needed to have Kat on the podcast as soon as possible so that we can do what we can to help fund these, to get people out of Gaza or what's going on right now. But so maybe to explain what you're doing, essentially, in short, it's people can give crypto and then that crypto will go to whoever is needed to get people out and get them evacuated from Gaza. But maybe before we get to that, I think it'd be interesting if you want to share with us an introduction, how you came to know about Gaza and the situation there and your connections.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on. So yeah, I'm Kat. I'm a product person based in Berlin. I've been working in tech for the last 12 years. The last couple of years I was working in crypto. And yeah, my first introduction to Gaza and Palestine in general was back in 2007 during the siege of Gaza when the full blockade came into force, the land, sea, and air blockade of Gaza. So that was my first sort of like moment of consciousness about Palestine and about Gaza in particular. When I was working at SoundCloud many years ago, there was an initiative in Berlin called Berlin Geekettes. And they had a chapter in Gaza called Gaza Geekettes, and it was part of this tech hub in Gaza called Gaza Sky Geeks. And what this tech hub did was incubated Palestinian startups in Gaza, worked on training people in tech skills in Gaza, and was all about this tertiary like aid program in order to like provide financial freedom for people living in Gaza. And that's an initiative that has since also opened in the West Bank as well. But the main hub for the office was in Gaza City. And what this program did was bring mentors from outside Gaza into Gaza so that you could meet with the community members, run workshops, do one-on-one coaching, help out with the boot camps. And yeah, as soon as I found out about it, I was like, this is something I absolutely want to do at some point in my career. I was trying to be quite cognizant of like not going when I was still pretty junior and just wanted to go to Gaza. Like I wanted to wait until I was at a more senior point in my career. And then, yeah, like after the COVID restrictions ended and they were opening up for mentors, I felt like I was in a good place professionally, that I felt like I could go and give some value to the community there. So I traveled to Gaza in June 23. My initial trip to Gaza was actually postponed because of bombing in Gaza in May 23. So there was already like this escalation that happened earlier last year. My trip was postponed to June. But yeah, I spent some time there. As I said, like I was visited the boot camp. They were in the final stages of their project. I gave some workshops to like founders and just community members in general about building product, like a lot about product discovery, but also talking about some of the differences between building in crypto and not in crypto. And also giving workshops on like hiring PMs and doing some career coaching as well. So yeah, it was really like amazing opportunity. Learned a lot about, yeah, like tech in the MENA region, just really like inspiring to meet people in Gaza who are working on similar problems, but like in very different circumstances. And also, yeah, like some of the challenges that they come up against building tech in Gaza.
Yeah, I think what is interesting to note about your experience, and I think which is something that for a lot of people who have a kind of stronger understanding of the situation, it's because the current situation is not like necessarily, it's new, but it's not necessarily, it's a continuation of what happened well before the October 7th attacks. This was a situation of being bombed before any of this even happened. So there's this false thing that I see being put out by certain people on Twitter that there was peace before October 7th, which was absolutely not the case. Even for you, who was someone who wanted to go into Gaza before October 7th ever happened, they were being bombed anyways by Israel. And so if we move on, maybe for the current situation, as far as I understand, I don't know all of the details, of course, but I know there is still ongoing bombing and there is still a lot of restrictions on the amount of food and aid that can go into Gaza. So I was wondering if you could maybe highlight that a bit.
Yeah, just scrolling my social media feed this morning. I think yesterday was one of the worst days since the very beginning for heavily bombing in Gaza City, where people are, in this forced starvation, famine. No aid is getting into the north, really, or very limited supplies. The people that are coordinating the aid getting into the north are being targeted by the occupation forces and killed. Yeah. It's really, yesterday, I think, was just a horrendous day, seeing the siege of Al-Shifa Hospital again as well, and some of the images coming out of that. So, and then at the same time, you have the majority of people in Gaza are displaced in Rafah, and there's still discussions ongoing about a ground invasion of Rafah, which every major NGO organization in the world is saying will be an absolutely catastrophic civilian death. So I think yesterday was one of the toughest days I've had in a while reading the news.
Yeah, it's interesting. From the beginning, there was this constant kind of just obfuscation of the facts about how Israel was targeting hospitals or not. And now at this point, there's only one hospital left, at least what's left of it. And all of this has just continued to happen lie after lie as the situation gets worse and worse. And so I think we're at a point, we've seen the international community not really do enough for what's going on in Gaza. And so we are in a situation where it is the things that we have to do essentially involve, of course, getting out there and applying pressure however you can apply pressure by going to protests, to whatever governments that you are able to apply pressure to, but then as well, trying our best to get as many people as you can out of Gaza. That's what we're able to do at the moment. But I think the situation is very complicated always, but I think it would be interesting to know for people, what is this situation? I think a lot of people don't really maybe not know that people can get out, or that they cannot get out, but that there is a way to get out. Is just quite costly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so if you're interested in reading more about this, there's an article that was written by an Egyptian journalism platform called Madame Asser, and I would highly recommend reading it because it goes into the details not just of the situation since October, but the status quo that. So, yeah, I guess people will be really curious about the process for actually evacuating people through the Rafah crossing. I would highly advise you to read this article that I'll share the link to, that has an in-depth reporting on what the situation was for the Rafah crossing, both prior to October and since, and how that's developed over the last couple of months. And yeah, I would just recommend for you to read that, because I think it answers a lot of people's questions and is a really good resource for what's going on at the moment at the Rafah border. And then the last thing I guess I wanted to say was, I cashed out some of my crypto gains earlier this year to contribute to a friend's GoFundMe. I think it's really one of the things that's been really upsetting about all of this is realizing that there is actually a price on a human life, and feeling that weight on your soul of, I have the capacity to actually do something here, and I actually have the capacity to save someone's life. And that's not an everyday situation, and it's something that those of us who've been able to benefit from the gains in the crypto market, we're uniquely positioned to do this without it really having any impact on our situations.
So yeah, I guess the kind of one of the things that I just wanted to mention, maybe just for myself, that one of the things that I really struggled with whenever this kind of started popping up as an opportunity or as a potential for people, I knew it was possible, but the difficulty is the lack of, I guess, trust. It's in a lot of these disaster situations, of course, you want to, I think a lot of people feel do I give, is the best thing I can do give money to this specific GoFundMe or whatever else? I mean, my kind of strategy has been to just give mostly to people that either that I have some sort of social connection to through some, kind of web of trust type of thing, if you want to say that, where I know I have friends who are in Gaza, and so I help them. So I think not having this kind of there's not really any clear trusted entity, it seems to me, in order to that you can give and then they will handle everything through some robust institutional system to make this all happen in this type of situation of genocide, of like mass oppression. I think this lack of structure is basically on purpose. The complexity and the difficulty is a feature, not a bug, you say.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think the thing that we've seen happen over the course of the last like couple of months is like the NGOs and the like more institutional organizations that were providing aid to Gaza prior to October and who were set up and had this infrastructure inside Gaza already, like, haven't been able to access Gaza. Like, Israel is not allowing the aid to get in. And it was actually really interesting because I remember when I was in Gaza and I was speaking to someone from an NGO and they were like, oh yeah, I mean, like, the situation in Gaza is actually very, like, stable. Like, the infrastructure has been here for the last, like, 17 years. You know, it's a very, like, predictable place to operate as an NGO in comparison to, like, disaster situations. Mm. And now there is a disaster situation and all of that structure has disappeared and like the roots of like getting aid in through these structures no longer exists. So what do you do in that situation? It's like the thing that has come to the forefront and the only way to really like make sure that people can get money, can get aid, can survive is through mutual aid. And whether that's through a GoFundMe or yeah, like I can talk a little bit more about some projects that friends are running as sure. well to actually get like money into Gaza to feed people in the north and like build tents that can actually withstand like the winter elements. But yeah, it's this kind of, if we don't have governments and we don't have infrastructure and we don't have institutions, like all we really have is each other. And like, how can we use that to like the best of our abilities to try and save lives?
Yeah. 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 It's been... One of the things I have friends who are Palestinian, and one of the things that I notice about them is that they are they're always looking out for how to help you, which I think comes out of being in these types of situations where you rely on your social networks to protect yourselves and protect your social network. So mutual aid is like this informal social net to make sure that we can make sure that as many people as possible are taken care of. But of course, this becomes more and more difficult as the pressure increases, as the aid decreases, and as the infrastructure kind of crumbles. And so they are reliant as well now on, of course, it was by design. I had a couple of years ago, I had some Palestinians on to discuss like the issue with Gaza and Palestine in general being horrifically dependent. Something like 80% of like the money in Palestine is from international aid. And so they, of course, there is this flipping where they say, or Israelis or whoever who are against the Palestinian struggle will say that like they're asking for handouts or whatever else, but also the entire situation and system is designed that way for them to not be able to have this kind of economic sovereignty or anything else. They don't have their own currency. You were mentioning earlier. A lot of these things have been designed for a long time, well before October 7th. And I think the way that I see, for me, that entire event was that it was a reaction to what was already happening. And when that gets ignored, then you're completely taking out like the humanity of these people who, like, I don't think anybody wants to take part in such an event, but it's something that if you're in such a situation, there has to be some sort of cause to it, and you can't ignore those causes. But yeah, I guess, I don't know if there's, you mentioned that there were some projects that maybe you wanted to share about with some friends.
Yeah, so I have two friends who lived and worked in Gaza for like 5 years with Gaza Sky Geeks, and they have two initiatives running at the moment. One is a mutual aid fund to get money into Gaza, so to be able to provide it to the people who need it most to get food. And yeah, like to build tents that can withstand the elements at the moment. And they've been able to get quite a lot of money into Gaza and be able to distribute it to people who are most in need. So I can share the link for that. And then they also actually started another initiative for GoFundMe Champions. So they're recruiting people who can essentially take a Gazan family's GoFundMe and like sponsor it to their network. So it's connecting people that they know in Gaza with people that they know outside Gaza. And yeah, like this kind of one-to-one relationship between someone who's outside Gaza and can do that sponsorship is hopefully going to be able to raise some more money for them. So I can share the links for both
of those. Yeah, for sure. I'll have those in the show notes. And then maybe because ETH Evacuations, if you go to the website, it has, of course, a little bit about yourself, about the project, and as well an address that people can send to. So you're mainly looking for Ether for people to give or anything else?
Yeah. So yeah, ETH on mainnet, Base or Optimism is amazing. And we'll take donations in whether it's ETH or tokens on the network as well.
So I'm just curious to know, based on this experience, this is something for me is interesting to know as well for whatever disasters comes our way later in life. But what is it that you think specifically that crypto is doing in this particular situation, doing it for this cause?
Yeah, for sure. So I think maybe the easy answer here is that crypto is a community of people who have money and who are like, this is our arena, like being able to pull funds together for projects and for initiatives and being able to do that very quickly. And that's something that's been really amazing about crypto. One thing I will say is that I'm trying to be as practical as possible here, because it isn't this beautiful, idealistic, like end-to-end on-chain experience. Yeah. Like having to stay like flexible to the changing circumstances and the unpredictability of like actually being able to get that money into Gaza after it's been raised. But I think the real power here has been like people in our industry gathering around a cause and being very generous with their donations.
Yeah. With the recent increase in price, I encourage everyone to at least put a portion of that money that you're making for those who are suffering the worst at the moment in Gaza. And I think I think there is this a bit of idealism perhaps in the crypto world that every kind of problem or situation we can completely handle it on chain and it'll be completely autonomous and decentralized. But that's really not, especially during disaster situations, that's like not really either not possible or not necessarily desirable in situations like this is compression.
Yeah, definitely. I think like I'd been thinking a lot from the beginning of this situation, like how I could do something crypto related to help Gaza in one way or another. And like, I went through like a bunch of different ideas and thinking about like how I could like have this wonderful solution and over engineered probably and like trying to automate everything. And at the end of the day, I think it's like crypto is awesome for like raising this like huge pool of capital that can then be like deployed to people in need. I'm like this trusted, like, intermediary person where I have connections to both like crypto world and people on the ground in Gaza, and these are all people I know personally, and I can like make that connection, and then I just need to be as practical as possible about like how to actually move that money to people in need. And I think that's like the approach that maybe I've just like taken with building products forever. It's like, what can I do without an engineer? Like, how can I like make this like happen myself or make it seem like it's happening seamlessly? And yeah, I think there just needs to be a bit of a human element there right now to try and be as practical as possible about it.
I think it is in these situations where trust in humans is more powerful than like trust in a product or an app, because it is it's a very serious human situation going on. And so you said people can send their ETH, they go to ethevacuations.xyz. Is the website?
Exactly.
If they go there, they'll find everything that they need to send it. And then I think, is there an ENS as well?
There's not an ENS.
So, so go to ethevacuations.xyz. I'll put the full address definitely in the show notes. I've already given a bit, so I put my money where my mouth is. And yeah, you mentioned Mainnet, Optimism, or Base as the main networks that you would like to receive it in.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you. And yeah, I guess thanks to everybody who's donated so far. We've actually been able to finish the GoFundMes for two full families so that they can start the evacuation process. There's a third family that we've been able to donate to get a last family member process started. And yeah, next up, I'm trying to raise for a young woman called Naveen, who I met in Gaza. She's a 23-year-old data analyst, and I would love to be able to raise the money to get her family out of Gaza.
Yeah, great. Is there maybe any last words you want to leave with people, anything else that people can or should do?
Yeah, I think that what I don't want people to come away from this conversation is thinking that like I'm doing something amazing by doing this or doing something out of the ordinary. I think everybody has it within their capacity to do something to move the needle forward, to help with this situation. And if there's anything that I would like people to take away from it is like, how can you leverage like your specific situation in order to help people in Gaza? Because yeah, at the end of the day, all we really have is each other.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate all the work that you're doing. I really appreciate, yeah, being able to recognize your particular spots and situation to try to maximize the amount of help that you can get into Gaza. And yeah, I recommend people check out ethevacuations.xyz. It's the best thing that I've seen so far. A lot of people have asked me, what can we do with crypto to help people in Gaza? Kind of my gut reaction is to say, go out and protest. But the other thing you can do is, of course, donate to ethevacuations.xyz and give some of that crypto that you've been making past few weeks, to help people who really need it. So yeah, thanks so much.